What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Dave has a day off. Steve Thompson in, typically in on Saturdays, occasionally fill in for Henry Lake here on the CCO. Pete Najarian's in, Josh Wheeler is here, and we're pleased to be joined by Matthew Collar, Purple Insider. Nobody does a better job covering the Vikes than Matthew Collar. Hey, good to visit with you, and obviously a big opportunity for the Vikings and Sam Darnold to get it turned around Monday night, Matthew.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, after they had won 9 straight games, everybody had finally started to trust Darnold and trust the Vikings, which is a hard thing, I know, for Vikings fans to come around on. And I know Mr. Najarian had his doubts throughout the season. But then, you know, the Detroit game comes along and it felt like they just did not match the moment, the atmosphere, the competition, all those things, which I think knocked down that confidence meter a little bit. But, you know, it is a week-to-week league, my friends, because, I mean, think about the Houston Texans going into yesterday's game. It felt like they were down bad and everybody was picking the Chargers, and then the Texans come out high-flying and win that game. So I've always felt like how a season ends, the last week, the last 2 weeks, are not really all that predictive of what's going to happen in the playoffs. But the Vikings have to prove it. They got kind of a tough break being a 14-win team that goes on the road, but they got to show that they were a 14-win team, and they have a very, very tough opponent in the Rams to do it again.
Matthew, I totally agree with you. What did you think about the idea of, if you're Sam Darnold or if you're O'Connell, how do you decide you're going to prepare him for this game? And I say that because of the fact that they went up against Detroit. Detroit had 11 different players on the defensive side that had been put on IR, so they were missing, you know, a lot of different talent for sure, and yet they were able to shut us down in a big way. We only had 14 first downs in the game. What did they do? Did they decide to really look into this, or did they almost say, you know what, let's flush that and let's just move on, and that was just a game that went the wrong way?
Yeah, I think what O'Connell is probably going to do here is, so they're going to go back and look at some of the fundamental stuff with Darnold throwing the football. But, you know, just 2 weeks ago, he put up 377 against the Green Bay Packers. So you don't want to change too much, right? I mean, he had such an incredible run. I mean, he put up, what, 5 touchdowns against the Falcons and, you know, had the game-winning drive against the Cardinals. So you don't want to say, hey, let's throw everything out just because one game went badly. I actually think the message for O'Connell should be there were all the throws were right there. You just got to make them. I mean, he had a touchdown throw go over Justin Jefferson. He had a 25-yard pass over the middle go over the top of T.J. Hockenson. And it might have been the fact that Sam Darnold has not been on a stage like that since, I don't know, the Rose Bowl in 2016. I mean, it's been a really long time in this guy's career since he's had kind of the weight of the world on his shoulders. And maybe that'll be good for him that he had that before he went into the playoffs with that rare atmosphere in Detroit. But I think even from O'Connell's perspective, you don't want to change too many play calls when you had open wide receivers and opportunities. But I think one thing they do want to focus on is what they do in pass protection, because it went pretty badly in Detroit. I think Detroit surprised them with the number of cover zero blitzes, which basically means sending everybody except for the guys who are covering wide receivers. They had trouble dealing with that. The stunts and twists up front and different things that Detroit was doing to force their offensive line to communicate. Now, this should be a lot easier in Arizona with a mixed bunch of fans than it was in Detroit, which was one of the craziest atmospheres that I have seen in any game that I've covered. That was like the Superdome. It was like U.S. Bank Stadium for opposing teams coming in, and I think the offensive line struggled to communicate and protect Darnold, and that made things worse. But I think the opportunities were there to have played a lot better against Detroit, and so I think they just want to stay the course with this offense against the Rams and hope to deal with the pass protection a little better than they did against the Lions.
Matthew Collard joining us from Purple Insider on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. And this Rams offense presents challenges for that Viking defense. They are going to be stretched, no doubt.
Yeah, I mean, I think that on kind of both sides of the ball, the Rams have some things that the Vikings don't like to deal with. I mean, but Matthew Stafford is one of the best quarterbacks the last 20 years in the NFL. He's won a Super Bowl. He is a super talent when it comes to his arm strength. But I think where he's really gotten better is his decision making. Because when the Vikings used to play the Lions with Stafford, you could count on some wild, awesome throws. You could also count on some throws to the Vikings, and you could count on him taking sacks. That's where he's really grown his game. He only took 28 sacks this year, despite the fact that the Rams do not have the best offensive line. He gets the ball out quickly. He gets it to his superstar wide receiver, Puka Nacua, who you could argue is one of the five best receivers in the NFL. And so that's a challenge for them that they haven't faced too often this year, of a truly elite wide receiver. That'll be a challenge for Flores. And also, just how much do you blitz? How much do you blitz Stafford when you know the guy can pick it apart? But then again, it's so fundamental to who they are as a defense to blitz and send extra pressure. And the Vikings defense has also relied a lot on taking the ball away from the other team. They were able to do it in Detroit, which is a hard thing to do. The Rams are hard to take the ball away from. They're one of the best in the league at not turning the ball over. So there's kind of a key for the Vikings defense. Can you get Stafford to make that one mistake, that two mistakes, and take advantage when he's become much, much better at protecting the football? So I think it is a hard matchup for the Vikings against a quarterback like this.
I think people are not really looking at it as closely as you are, obviously, Matthew, but I think you're exactly right. The fact that he's only had 28 sacks, he doesn't have a great offensive line, but he gets rid of the ball quickly, and I think he makes great decisions. He's also got a great running back with him, and I think that's really something that I've always thought about throughout the NFL, is they started going in this direction years ago, but they don't give enough credit to the running game in the NFL. The Derrick Henrys and all the rest of these guys, that each team has their own, and Kieran Williams has done a great job. Obviously, he's had 14 touchdowns this year and 1,300 yards. Not so bad for a team that does like to throw the ball. I'm curious, does he have an advantage, do you think, over the Vikings because of the fact that he's expecting exactly the kind of rush that they did last week, maybe against Detroit? And if he can do that, he's not just got Nacua and Kupp, he's got that kid DeMarcus Robinson, who seems to be really coming into his own as well.
Yeah, I didn't have it on my bingo board that DeMarcus Robinson would get a couple of touchdowns last time the Vikings faced them. But, you know, I think the running game that you mentioned is really important because there have been only a few teams all year that have been able to run consistently against the Vikings, and the Rams were one of them on that Thursday night game. Now, maybe some of that was just the Vikings had come off a really tough matchup with the Lions, and they were banged up, and so that's a team that you want to run against. Now they'll get some extra rest, but still, I also think that they have a good run scheme with Sean McVay, and it's always an important part of their play-action game is to build it off of the run. But, you know, I mean, I think that when it comes to the weapons, a lot of it is focused on Puka Nacua and stopping him. Cooper Kupp is not the same wide receiver that he was a couple of years ago. And you'd much just rather have DeMarcus Robinson or this version of Cooper Kupp or Tyler Higbee try to beat you as opposed to Nacua, because he's such a dominant player. I think that what they did really well last time was they got the ball out of Stafford's hands quickly, and Nacua is a big dude and he can break tackles. If they're able to do that consistently and stay on the field for a long period of time, last time they dominated the time of possession over the Vikings, then it's going to be a pretty rough ride. I do think that Brian Flores now has a whole week to prepare for Nacua, where the last time, remember, we thought he wasn't going to play, and then all of a sudden he did and completely changed the game. So if they can take away, at least to some extent, their best wide receiver, I'd be much more confident. It's not like the Vikings where you have Addison and Hockenson. I think it's much more like they have to kind of work the ball to one guy over and over and then hope for other guys. So that'll be an interesting challenge to see. Does Flores throw some Belichickian type stuff out there that we haven't seen before? Because they don't really double wide receivers a lot, but they might have to do that against Puka Nacua.
Well, Matthew, good to visit with you. Our time goes all too quickly. Look forward to your coverage of the game.
Thanks, Matthew.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
All right, there he is, Matthew Collar, Purple Insider on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker hotline.